This is the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com. The USA Today NFL Wire site, all about the Arizona Cardinals, and my co-host is Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, the SB Nation Arizona Cardinals site, and we are recording episode 287 on a Tuesday night. This is a great time to be a Cardinals fan. We have one of the most exciting endings ever. The Cardinals get an improbable 32-30 win over the Buffalo Bills, a game in which it looked bad early. They took control, then lost it in the last minute, and then won it in the final seconds. The Hail Mary, the DeAndre Hopkins dunking on three people, whatever you want to call it, Seth. That was a great game at the end. It's being talked about nationwide. First of all, let's talk about 6-3. How satisfied should Cardinals fans be with this win?
I think anytime you're winning a game, whether it's, you know, a blowout or the last minute, you're satisfied. I think something like this is a little sweeter for Cardinals fans because, let's just be honest, like, this isn't a typical Cardinals result. They're usually on the opposite end of a Hail Mary or, you know, something big happening. And so for this to be a result for the Cardinals is, you know, a little bit different. It's nice to be on, you know, the right side, I guess you would call it, of this outcome. Something we're just not used to as Cardinals fans. And you know, speaking of not being used to, the, you know, one of the best offenses in the NFL now, you know, resides in Arizona. That's, again, something that we don't see a lot as Cardinals fans. And it's, you know, it just feels a lot different at this point. You're seeing a team kind of come together, an organization come together and find ways to win and put themselves in a position to win. And that's just not something that we've seen from this group. And now, you know, they're technically the top team in the NFC West.
It's insane. Now, like, obviously, in the NFL, winning games is difficult. And as frustrating as it was to see the Cardinals lose the lead in the final minute, if we wanted to kind of take a look at two of their three other losses this season, they had failures. Like, they failed to make plays against Detroit. They failed to make plays when they needed to against the Dolphins last week. And so you look at that game, and even though there were problems, and we're going to talk about some of those, they lost the lead, they made the play. Like, so I think it has to feel satisfying, even if there are still some creeping concerns that when you win a game on a Hail Mary, you always question, well, is that how you really want to win the game? You always want to win. And so it's satisfying in that sense because there's a lot of things that were satisfying. So one, they won the game after looking like they had lost the game. So that's satisfying. You got a historic play that will go down in Cardinals history. It'll be something that's replayed year after year. They take over the division lead. Now, there's three teams tied at 6-3. So there's a lot of levels of being satisfied. That said, and then on top of that fact, it comes out this time that they make the plays that they need, and they won a close game late. Now, they've won some of these things, like against Seattle, they made plays. But it shows kind of the progress they're making and the fact that they had pretty much their, when you look at the problems they had against Miami, a lot of that was mitigated by the fact that, you know, they were missing two of their starters in the secondary. And against a really good Buffalo offense, they managed to hold them enough. And getting those starters back in the secondary took care of business.
Yeah, and one of the things that we've talked about with this team in general is just finding wins, stacking wins, and being consistent. And while there's, you know, the two games that we talked about that you can lament, you know, the Carolina game was just a bad game. It happens. Everybody has bad games. At this point, you're getting to the point where you don't have to lament too much about these games because you're turning out a winning record. You know, we haven't mentioned it, but they've already set the season win total for under, you know, with Cliff Kingsbury as the coach. You can mock that. You can say whatever you want, but by nine games in, they've already matched what, you know, or they've already exceeded what they did in his first season. You know, we talked about the offensive jump year one to in year one, and now in year two, you know, they went from being historically awful under Steve Wilks and Mike McCoy and Byron Leftwich to now, you know, within, you know, in under two seasons, they are one of what, the 5 to 7 best offenses in the NFL.
And one of the most exciting to watch. They are now becoming a team that, you know, national pundits are saying they are fun to watch.
Yeah, and that's the thing is, you know, they're still, I mean, you talked about it. They're still not there yet. That's, I think, you know, like I talked about with Kyler last week, when you look at Kyler and what you're excited about, and I said the thing I think you're most excited about is he's not a finished product. I mean, he still has plenty of things he has to work on to get better. Some of those were in, you know, full focus in the Buffalo game. But at the same time, I mean, he's a rousing success. It's, you know, he's an unquestionable success. He's a legitimate MVP candidate on the top team in what, you know, is still looking like the best division in the NFL. And when you put all of that together and you remember he's 23, Cliff is, you know, very young for a head coach, and in only his second year, I mean, you have to be excited, and getting a win like that is a signature moment for this team. And that's the thing is, you know, we talked about this before. We're not talking about, oh, they're going definitely going to a Super Bowl now, or, you know, oh, they're definitely going to win a Super Bowl now. But what you're doing, one of the biggest things that we talked about is learning how to win consistently. And they're doing that now. They're also learning what it takes to be a team with a target and known what you're successful at. And that's the thing is the game against Buffalo, I think, was a lot better than we give anybody credit for because of what they were able to do and how they were able to do it. I mean, they were a very balanced offense, you know, putting up 453 yards of offense, you know, 236 yards passing, 217 yards rushing, and they had two turnovers. One was a super fluky, you know, interception that slightly thrown behind ball that Fitz gets his hands on, and, you know,
if it's anyone else, it's incomplete because he's so incredibly good about it, getting his arms under the ball. That's what led to the interception. It's one of those things that'll happen once in 1,000 throws.
And so, I mean, you just look at it, and then, you know, you had the Kenyon Drake fumble early, which, I mean, that Drake fumble really, I mean, if you go back to just the game flow at that point, you really felt like that could have been the dagger, right? Like, and it was only in the first quarter, early in the second quarter. I can't remember exactly when it was, but, I mean, that's baffling to think is that you have a fumble. I get that it's on your end of the field and everything, but you have a fumble that early in the game and you're like, oh, that's probably the game.
it sounded crazy, but that's how it did, was how it felt, because the Cardinals weren't finishing drives at the time, and they weren't doing anything to stop Buffalo. So it kind of felt like, oh, crap.
Yeah, and so, I mean, at the end of the day, you beat a team that was 6-7-2. That's a good football team, the number one team in the AFC East, and a likely playoff team. I mean, yeah, it was at home, so, I mean, I guess you take that into consideration a little bit, maybe. I don't know, but, I mean, I feel like this is a big win, and not just because of how they won, but because of what they were able to accomplish in this game.
And coming up next on the Rise FC Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web, let's talk about the most impressive parts of the win. Now, we're going to talk about a number of things throughout the rest of the show. What's impressive, concerns and injuries that there are. We're going to look at the division and the outlook for the rest of the season, and then we'll preview the Seattle game. But coming up next on the Rise of the Seahawks podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web, let's talk about what we were most impressed by overall. That's coming up next on Rise of Sea Red. We're back on the Rise of Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. What were the most impressive things? Let's get it out of the way. How incredible was that final play? Because the truth is, you know, Aaron Rodgers is great, but everything about that play was incredible. That between Kyler's elusiveness to his running to his left and then being able to get the release on that ball, the perfectness of the throw, and then DeAndre just go, because that was not a fluky Hail Mary. That was not a fluky catch. That wasn't the chuck the throw down the field by Auburn where it bounces off the guy, bounces off the defender, and then when the guy is in stride, it lands in his hand and he runs into the touchdown. It wasn't the touchdown against USC for Arizona State where the defender goes up and makes a play on the ball and the ball falls into the other receiver's hands. This was a legitimate, the ball was perfectly placed in the end zone. It was thrown perfectly, and then DeAndre just goes up above everyone else because he's a little bit taller than all three of those DBs. He's got a little bit of higher vert, and he's got big hands, and he just grabs that ball and holds on to it. The energy that came from DeAndre, that came from Kyler, that came from that entire locker room to win in that fashion, that, oh my goodness, it's almost legacy or legacy beginning. The reputation Aaron Rodgers has, you know, Kyler making a throw like that in his second year of that caliber, that's legacy beginning.
Yeah, and that's the thing is, you know, the fact that he was able to elude the sack, I think is the first thing you talk about is that's a play typically where he eludes the sack and then maybe runs for a yard or runs out of bounds at the marker, you know, at the line of scrimmage and just doesn't make a negative play because his momentum's going that way. But for him to be able to, you know, turn his body and basically throw the ball across his body, and I think they marked it, 53 air yards traveled or whatever,
yeah,
it was.
Like that. Something crazy.
And for him to do that all in one motion, and then to put the ball in a position for DeAndre to make a play on it. I mean, that's, you know, like you talked about, like, he didn't even get a chance to reset his feet because he was going to get hit. And like I said, the momentum and the speed that he was already running with was taking him out of bounds, which he typically would do. So to flip his hips and make a throw, you know, we talked about it a lot before, but that's again one of those kind of baseball things where, you know, as a defender, you make a play, you know, as a second baseman, which he played, you know, you make a play and you're able to flip your hips and make an accurate throw to first base. And that's kind of what that was. That was a flip your hips and make a throw across the infield type of play. And, you know, obviously it's not something you want to do consistently, but to have that in your repertoire is, you know, quite the sight to behold. And again, I think for it to happen for the Cardinals instead of against the Cardinals is is just something we're not used to seeing.
Right. And I, you know, and knowing the play design after that, one is like, that wasn't a designed Hail Mary play. That's one of the options. But then the more I look at the play design, that's a really good play design or a play concept for something like that. And it works because you have a guy who can roll to his left. Because you look at that, and going to your left and then resetting the throw is not an easy thing to do. But it shortens the field in that sense. And the way they have it, they have, you know, they had Hop on the left, and they've got the three other receivers on the right. And all three of those receivers, they have different depths that they go down the field and then cut across the field. The idea is not to throw a Hail Mary, but it is to cut someone. So with 11 seconds left in the game, the concept is to at least cut the field in half for one final play that, you know, it's kind of like a normal pass play. Cliff said it was initially for Andy, and Andy Isabella, it didn't appear that he got across the field quickly enough to have made the play. Fitz was in a perfect spot. He went 10 yards and then went towards the sideline, but, you know, at a diagonal, kind of increasing his depth. You know, I think that probably would have ended up being the number one option, and they probably would have cut the field in half, and they would have had time for another throw. It probably would have been like 4 or 5 seconds left. But instead, so if the play goes as designed, you get Andy coming across the field, and because they're more guarding the end zone, like they had three defenders back on Hop, you hit Andy coming across and then getting out of bounds with, you know, a couple of seconds left from like the 10-yard line, and that's a doable play for there. That said, fantastic. But that wasn't the... There were a number of things that were impressive about that game, and I think number one is they showed, and that there was a stat, that the over the last 2 years, the Bills had not lost any game. They led after the first quarter or led after the first half. They flipped the script. The Cardinals flipped the script, and it took an extra possession, but they flipped the script again, and it looked like they had done that against Miami last week. They did it against Seattle. So even though that they continue to not have the fast start that you want to see them against quality teams, they're able to fight back and then eventually flip the script in a way so they're no longer playing from behind, but then they have control of the game. And that was impressive to see again, because that's not an easy thing to do week after week.
No, it's really not. And I mean, we're starting to see a team that is able to put together consecutive drives, consecutive weeks, that is able to open up all the offense and really kind of get things going in the right direction. And I mean, we talked about it going into the season, how important the stretch of games was going to be. I mean, when they started 2-2, we said, okay, the Jets and Cowboys were beatable. Obviously, that was the pre-Dak injury. But we felt like the biggest thing coming out of that was being able to split with the Seahawks. And then we knew the second half of the schedule was going to be brutal. And this 3-week stretch was going to probably be the hardest 3-week stretch of the season. And thus far, you know, they've not just been in the games, but they've been able to win both, you know, had a shot to win both games. And it's impressive to see a team that had such a letdown last week, in an emotional letdown, to not give up, to not give in, and to finish, you know, find a way to finish the game and get out on top. And we just, I mean, it's not something that you see very often at any team, and it's just not something that we've seen as Arizona Cardinals fans throughout our long history of being Cardinals fans.
Yeah, I think something we also have to talk about in terms of impressiveness is that rushing attack. Now, one, remember that injury that Kenyon Drake suffered? It looked like, oh, crap, he broke his ankle. They were talking he's going to miss several. He missed one game. And not only did he just miss the one game when he came back, yes, he had the fumble. Now, I've been very puzzled by the way fans have reacted toward Kenyon Drake's performance this year. No, he has not been a good – has not started, but that's been kind of the entire Cardinals offense. Drake came back missing only one game, 16 carries, 100 yards. He did have the one miscommunication with Kyler. That was bad. The fumble was obviously bad. But it's interesting the level of trust that Cliff Kingsbury has in him, because take the year ago, and it's David Johnson, and he fumbles against Tampa Bay, and he basically is buried for the rest of the season. Kenyon Drake, that's a terrible fumble. Cliff clearly trusts him and his ability, and he was rewarded. Now, granted, Buffalo's run defense has been suspect all year. They've really missed guys that are playing in the middle. That said, 217 rushing yards. They got great running from Chase. You got great running from Drake. And it's just interesting just how much more dynamic the running game is when you have both Drake and Edmonds to pair with Kyler Murray as opposed to just Edmonds. And Drake really is a critical part in this. And I'm starting to understand more and more the constant praise that Cliff gave Drake all last year and talking about his fit, because he is a difference maker in this offense. Even if he's not gaining big chunks of yards, or he's running, you know, sideline to sideline like he was for a couple of games earlier this year, the fact that he gets stronger as the game goes on, it plays perfectly into the type of game plan the Cardinals have.
Well, and I think we saw after the Miami game just how important Kenyon really is to the rushing game, and maybe not even Kenyon specifically, but this season Kenyon, and how much they need him to be successful consistently, because he is a guy that, as you said, he grinds out the tough yards, and it's something that Chase just really isn't built to do. Chase is more of a dynamic kind of big play runner, and you saw that in the game. I mean, we're talking about three guys running the football. I think they all averaged over 6 yards a carry.
It was absurd.
I mean, yeah, Kyler had 11 for 61, so he was just under 6 yards a carry. But Kenyon had 16 for 100, and Chase had 8 for 56. I mean, that's the thing, is that's what Kenyon adds back to this team, and to have, you know, three guys that are that dynamic, is just, it's hard to stop them. And at the end of the day, you have a team in Arizona that is equally adept at running the football as they are throwing the football, and that's not something you hear of very often.
Not at all. Anything else that stands out in terms of what impressed you most in that game?
I think for me, it continues to be, maybe not stand out, but it's my bewilderment, or I guess I just don't understand why this team is so much better in the second half of on defense than they are in the first half. And it's not a little different. I mean, it is almost, I mean, it's striking how bad they are defensively in the first half of games. I mean, the last three games going into halftime, you know, it was, 16 to 9, in the Miami game, they were down 24 to 17. And then, obviously, the Seattle game, they were down quite a bit as well. Like, why is this team, 27 to 17. Why does this team take an entire half to figure out how to play defense? Because in the second half of all those games, they're not just the better offensive team. Their defense is actually really, really good in the second half of games.
And that's weird because if we look at the history that we had with Vance Joseph, that was the one thing that he didn't seem to do. Because it doesn't feel like they're making adjustments. It just feels like they're deciding to play better because, you know, we saw the Todd Bowles teams in 2013, 2014, and he was a master at changing things up at halftime. Incredibly good. We didn't see that so much from James Betcher. We didn't see it in 2018 with the bad Cardinals. And last year and through the first part of this year, it didn't feel like that Vance Joseph was doing much to change things. And yet, you look at defensive philosophy, it doesn't feel like they're doing things much different. They just happen to be playing better on first and second down. And that's just kind of been the MO for them. Is now Buffalo was still, I think they were 6 of 12, maybe 6 of 13 on third down. That's worse than what the Cardinals have been doing on third down most of the year. But and if you look at each of the halves, they converted 3 of 6 in the first half and 3 of 7 in the second half. And so it was fairly consistent, but it turns out that, you know, they were missing opportunities in the first half, and they didn't in the second. They took advantage of it. So for whatever reason, either it's focus, either it's execution, or maybe it's simply getting accustomed to what the offenses are doing to them, the second half, it's just night and day.
It is, and it's almost, you know, it's one of the best things and worst teams about worst things about this team, but it's been impressive how they've, you know, as a team, they've been able to kind of mount these comebacks in the third quarter of games in three straight weeks to kind of give themselves a chance and be in position in the fourth quarter to win games. And again, that's just not something that we've seen a lot. So it's nice to see.
Cut on X on the Rise of C-Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's move on to the next part, which is, you know, injuries and concerns. Not fun to talk about. We got to do it. That's Cut on X on Rise of C-Red. We're back on the Rise of C-Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's talk about the concerns that we have for the Cardinals and what were the concerns that came out of that game. And then, two, they suffered some more injuries in that game, and one in particular is gonna affect them, I think. I think when you look at what concerns you have about the Cardinals, I think it is simply, it continues to be consistency, and then Cliff Kingsbury's seemingly, it's almost like he's trying to prove a point that he can do multiple things. Like, he seems to go completely against the game plan or the philosophy he had the week before and fail at it. And so when he gets criticized for being too conservative, then he's not conservative enough. In this case, they get the ball back with 4 minutes and 31 seconds. Now, in part, three series in a row, bad. There was the interception, there was a three and out, and there was a three and out. That's a problem. You can't do that. You can't give that offense. And it ended up biting them in the rear because Buffalo came back and got a go-ahead touchdown with 34 seconds left. And you knew that was going to happen. You just felt it like, oh, crap. If you're going to ask the defense to stop Buffalo over and over and over again, they're going to fail because Buffalo's good, and frankly, the Cardinals' defense, you can't count on it to do it that many times in a game. And so,
I just think any defense at this point, right. You can't. I mean, you and I were texting in the group text, and you look at Tampa Bay's defense the last two games. You know, obviously, like you were saying, the Cardinals' defense, like it just feels like teams are, for whatever reason, whether it's, you know, no offseason, the pandemic, it seems like the NFL is getting what they've wanted, and you're seeing much more offensive football. But to your point, you know, when it seems like when you absolutely need to stop at the end of the game, that's when they're struggling the most to get it.
Right. So this time it was in the case they get the ball with 4.5 minutes left, and you think, especially with the success they are having running the ball, that they'd be able to knock off, well, either knock off timeouts or knock off some clock. So instead, they have two incomplete passes and then essentially a sack on a busted play on third down. And in that possession, that three and out, they wiped out, 50 seconds? And that was about it? It was puzzling because – and we even gave the chance for Cliff both on Sunday and on Monday with questions was it what the defense was looking at? Was it the philosophy? Was it the looks that Buffalo was giving you? No, it was like that was by design. We wanted to be aggressive, and it just didn't work out. And when this was coming after the week before when we questioned his conservative – well, in the previous play – the previous week before that, where basically Cliff was bit in the butt but saved by Isaiah Simmons for his conservative decisions. And then last week, it bit him in the butt and they ended up missing the field goal instead of going for it and having a closer, even going down for the touchdown. This time, it seems like the Cardinals are overcoming questionable decisions by Cliff. And it just feels like over and over again that he's – maybe it's because he is, he's noted, he's flexible, he changes things up. It's like, it feels like he doesn't have a conviction about certain things when it comes to the fourth quarter.
Yeah, and it seems like he's still trying to feel his way in the NFL and where his schematics fit. And at the end of the day, to me, it's an easy call. You take what's being successful that day. And, again, obviously the youth football I coach is an extremely different level than trying to coach in the NFL. But I can tell you from a schematic standpoint, we, love to run the football. Well, this last game, they basically dared us to throw the football. And, we had about 250 yards passing, which in a 12U football game is absurd, and about 60 yards rushing, because they were just like, you're not going to beat us running the football. And, at the end of the day, you take what you're being successful with, but you also take what the defense is giving you an opportunity to be successful with. And I think that's where Cliff is still kind of finding his way is, what is the defense giving me and what can I do on my own? And right now it's just, it's just not a consistent thing, unfortunately. And he's having a bit of a struggle with it, but it's not, it cost him the Miami game, but he's also now won six games, increased his career high in wins as an NFL head coach. That's kind of all what you're looking for in all of this is continued improvement, and he's doing that at a rate that's definitely exceeding what we expected and where we expected them to be. I don't think either of us in our wildest dreams expected them to be in first place in week 9 or going into week 10.
No, definitely not. Definitely not. Now, anything else of concern of the things that you saw? Looking across the board, I think the one thing that's just I'm a little worried about is simply the pass rush isn't.
Yeah,
there's an issue. They got more pressure late, but they're just not getting home on the quarterbacks right now. And I understand why. You lose Chandler Jones, and then you lose Zach Allen, and then you're just you keep losing guys left and right. But now you've got Marcus Golden, Hassan Reddick. You should be we know about Marcus. He's a cleanup sack guy, and Hassan's kind of a cleanup sack guy. And so they all get close, but not close enough.
Yeah, and you're kind of seeing the risk you run in not having a balanced team. And obviously you're never, saying, having depth behind Chandler Jones. Well, you don't have depth behind Chandler Jones. You don't have depth behind Tom Brady. That's just the reality. Like those guys are so good at what they do. you don't have depth behind them because you can't, they're irreplaceable. But that doesn't mean you shouldn't, you know, invest in the position. And I think Kennard's lack of playing time lately due to, you know, his myriad of injuries that he's trying to battle through right now is a huge issue because, like you said, Golden's one, he wasn't playing a lot in New York. I don't think that's something that was really widely known because, you know, he did have such a good season last year for the Giants, and but he just wasn't getting a ton of snaps this season. And so I wonder how in shape he is right now, you know, because they obviously wanted him on a pitch count in game one, and it just looked like he doesn't have that juice right now. But you know, and we've talked about Reddick and how improved he is, but he's still not, you know, a number one pass rusher. And if anything, I think his play is kind of signaling, like, he's definitely a guy you want on your roster, but, like, at what cost? How much are you willing to pay for a Hassan Reddick-type player? And so, you know, right now, the concerning thing is, like you said, getting guys back and healthy, and I don't know if that's coming or not, because it's just been one of those seasons where they've had injury after injury to key pieces of the defensive puzzle.
And the latest is Corey Peters, and they haven't made anything official, but it really sounds like it's probably torn ACL or something of the like, which really puts them, because Jordan Phillips missed last game. I think he's going to come back against Seattle, but they only had three healthy defensive linemen to finish that game. And the names of those were Angelo Blackson, Josh Morrow, and Trevon Coley. How many of you guys knew, like, you know, Josh Morrow we know, but Trevon Coley, he was a guy when they signed, we're like, who? And Angelo Blackson, when they signed him, you're like, who?
and Blackson's a nice player, but all three of those guys are definitely depth pieces. You know, Coley wouldn't even be on the roster if they had their full array of guys. But, I mean, Lecky Fotu just went on IR.
Richard Lawrence appears to have had a setback because he was designated for return, and last Friday he wasn't at practice. Today he wasn't at practice. So it almost feels like he had a setback or whatever. And, you know, Zach Allen's on IR, and we don't know anything about when his return is coming. And so, you know, it looks like against Seattle, it looks like hopefully Jordan Phillips comes back. So you're going to have Jordan Phillips and Josh Morrow and Angelo Blackson, Trevon Coley, and then probably Michael Dogby will get elevated for that game. And, you know, it's some people, but against an offense like Seattle, you hope for better.
Yeah, and so that's one of the concerns is it just as the season's going along, the attrition that's going to happen. And, you know, we talked about it earlier, but the reality is they can afford to lose two, maybe three defensive linemen. They've lost five now. They're down their top and they're down their top. They were down their top five. Think about that. They're down their top five defensive lineman and won the game, and really did a nice job in the, you know, containing Buffalo's rushing attack, which isn't very good. So I don't want anybody to think I'm saying, you know, they stopped the Ravens rushing attack, but, you know, they still were able to stop a team with only three defensive linemen and duct tape. So, you know, I think you have to give them, you know, a hats off and credit, but it is a concern moving forward because how injured is this team? And you know, what, I mean, you can say next man up as much as you want and have that super cool mantra, but at the end of the day, talent wins out in the NFL, and the Cardinals are starting to hemorrhage talent. So we got to hope that, you know, whether it's Peters, which, you know, I think you're right. I think it's going to be a bad news Bears type thing. Or if it's, you know, getting Jordan Phillips back, your huge free agent acquisition this offseason, you've got to start seeing some health get back there. And we didn't even bring up Devondre Campbell yet, who is likely to miss this game with what seems like a calf muscle strain. But that, I mean, that's a tough injury to overcome on a week in not a week, in 3 days, basically.
And I think maybe it's less of a concern because I think everyone's excited for what that means. And I know I'm going to talk about that when we hit this part of the game part of the show when we preview Seattle, is that this is the opportunity for Isaiah Simmons, who, you know, he came in for limited action, made some really nice plays. We get to see what this guy is all about. Coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best of our Cardinals talk on the web. Let's move on to the next part, and let's talk about the division. The Cardinals are technically in first place. What's it going to take the rest of the way? What does the outlook look for this team? Coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. The Cardinals and the Seahawks and the Rams, they are all 6-3 right now. However, because the Cardinals are 2-0 in the division, they have the best division record. That puts them in first place. They hold a head-to-head tiebreak over the Seattle Seahawks right now. And the Rams also hold a head-to-head tiebreak against Seattle right now. 6-3, all three of those teams. What's it going to take? I look at the rest of the schedule. I think a win this week really puts the Cardinals in the driver's seat, but not completely, because the Rams can still keep pace. But a win on Thursday gives them a third division win. And then I look at the two games they still have with the Rams. Now, we still have the other games to worry about, but I think the Cardinals can almost clinch the division with a win on Thursday. And ideally, it would be a win in the first game against the Rams instead of having to wait for Week 17. You have to pick up one of those wins against the Rams because you don't want them to have a 2-0 and hold that outright tiebreak of head-to-head if they're going to end up with the same record. And that's the benefit. If they beat Seattle this week, it doesn't matter if they end up with the same record. It means Seattle must win one more game for the season to be able to pass the Cardinals in the division, because the Cardinals will have swept them. I know you look at it, you look at a division winner, you always think, oh, in your division, you got to win four games. They've already got one in their pocket against San Francisco, one against Seattle. They pick up another one in Seattle and beat one of the games against the Rams. That's four. And ideally, you beat San Francisco in Week 16 because they are a mess. And they have pretty much no one left on their roster that you've ever heard of. And so that could be five wins. But even if you beat San Francisco, I still think you have to win one of those Rams games. And if you just stack those wins, you get one against Seattle this week, you get one against the Rams, and you get the 49ers, that's three more wins. That's nine wins. And you get nine wins, 5-1 of the division. If you just steal one win somewhere in the other games, 10-6 with a 5-1 record in the division, you probably win that division. You might have to win another game, but you at least put yourself in the best position by having won four or five of your division games.
Yeah, and to your point, you know, you talk about the importance of winning these games. When you look at what they have to do against the Seattle and in L.A., one of the things that has to come from this weekend is that they give themselves room for error. Because as we've talked about, this team is still learning how to win consistently. And so when you have, you know, a game in hand, as they do on Seattle right now, if they win on Thursday night, they basically, I mean, they do take a two-game lead on the Seahawks in the division, which is really tough to overcome, you know, for any team, but especially a team that's struggled so much defensively this season in the Seahawks. So I think the importance becomes more than just, you know, continuing to win and things of that nature, but also because it gives you margin of error. And all of a sudden, if you're not feeling that extreme pressure of every game is a must win, and I mean, let's face it, it still is, but when you're not feeling that pressure that every game is a must win, I think you tend to play at a higher level, and you'll see that this coming week, if the Cardinals are able to pick up a win, because they'll have, like we said, two games on Seattle, and now all of a sudden all it really becomes is, can they win a game against the Rams? So this game, you know, is important for the division, but it's also important just to be ready to put yourself in a position for the playoffs. And they've done that through, obviously, more than the first half of the season. Like we said, I think they're technically the 3 seed right now behind New Orleans and Green Bay. But they're 1 game out of first, which is huge.
Yes.
You know, we've talked about that 2 seed may not be the best seed to get, because you'll probably end up playing an NFC West team for that in that one. But at the end of the day, when you're starting to discuss maneuverability within the playoffs, I think that just tells you that you're definitely on the right track and trending in the right direction, getting ready to continue what has been an important season, and giving you confidence in that you, within your own division, are a real contender. Because as we talked about, I wrote about the last decade, 6 of the Super Bowl participants were NFC West teams, and none of those were the Arizona Cardinals. So, you know, they're the team that's kind of due right now. And so the question is, can they continue to take those steps forward? Obviously, the easiest way to get to a Super Bowl is by winning your division and getting one of those top seeds. Obviously, it's a little different now. You don't have the first round bye if you're the 2 seed, but you're still in a great position. And so, you know, let's hope that this Thursday, you know, is a chance to give themselves that buffer and really put pressure on a team like Seattle, as opposed to a young team in Arizona feeling that same type of pressure.
And, you know, this team right now, we've gone through this roller coaster, because if you've been listening to the show, when the Cardinals finished, started the season 2-0, we're like, can they be 5-0 heading into Dallas? They go and lose 2 games. Then they win 3 in a row. They win 3 in a row, and they're like, then they were like, hey, could they be 7-2 heading into their game against Seattle? Nope. Then they lose a game to Miami. But it feels again, after a win like that against the Bills and a winnable game, it's what appears to be a winnable game against Seattle. You look at those schedule that's left, you've definitely got winnable games. They'd be get win number 7 against Seattle if they do. New England looks beatable. The Giants are definitely beatable. The Eagles and 49ers are definitely beatable. And then you want to pick up one or two wins against the Rams. And you feel like, you know, they're sitting at 6-3 right now, but you're thinking, you know, 12 wins. Like, we start bumping those expectations out when we start at 2-0. We're like, oh, they're going to be 5-0. Or they're going to be 7-2 going into Seattle. This team has some ebbs and flows of the season. They always seem to bump us down a notch when we get a little too excited. But right now, the way they're playing, you think, you know, they could win 12 games. Well, it'll probably be 10 or 11, but you look at the rest of the season and wow, this is turning into something really nice.
Well, and you know, I think I had them at 8-8 or 9-7, and honestly, at this point, I think, and I know Jess will slightly disagree with me, but I think the only acceptable outcome, barring a major injury to, you know, one of the kind of key guys, is nine wins. I think obviously you want to be better than 3-4 down the stretch, but I think if you get to 3-4 or, you know, you get to 9 wins, that's just such a massive growth from last year when you were 5-10-1. You're now all of a sudden you're +4 in the win column in Cliff's second year. You know, you end up being really close to a, or you actually are. No, you're just slightly below a 500 coach, you know, at what, 14-17-1, and you set yourself up for, you know, kind of to be the team that's in vogue going out next year. Now, obviously, you'd love to see them, like Jess said, 11-12 wins in that range, but they've created the opportunity to set their expectations higher. And I think Jess is right when you look at it and say, this is a team that when they play their best, they're a team that can win 12 games. The question always becomes, is this a team that's going to play their best every single week? And I mean, I don't want to say no, but I do think we are seeing that this is still a very young team led by a young quarterback and coach who still has growing pains to get through. And you know, you look at Kansas City, and everybody kind of uses that as the model. But the difference being, and as much as you and I love Cliff and think he's, you know, on his way to being a very good coach in the head coach in the NFL, he's not Andy Reid. I mean, Andy Reid was a Hall of Famer, and now he's basically guaranteed a spot in the Hall of Fame with his Super Bowl win. That's the slight difference. They don't have that coach that can make up for the quarterback's lack of experience. And let's not forget that even though it was his first year starting, they did not, you know, the Kansas City Chiefs did not go to the Super Bowl in Patrick Mahomes kind of year one starting. And so they're still, you know, they're still ahead of schedule in my book. But again, as every game kind of occurs, we reset our expectations. Let's hope that, you know, getting to 7-3 resets the expectations, and maybe a Rams loss too, and you're kind of alone in first place in the division with 10 days to get rested up. I mean, that is probably the best case scenario.
Coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's talk about the Seattle game that will take place Thursday night. Cardinals have a huge opportunity. They're banged up. Seattle's banged up. Seattle's struggling. The Cardinals are playing well. It's going to be quite the game. That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best start of Cardinals talk on the web. And let's talk about this game against the Seahawks, because what in the world has happened to this Seattle team after starting off, you know, 5-0? They've lost 3 of their last 4 games. Their defense continues to be a problem, but even more so, Russell Wilson has started turning over the ball. This is very unlike him. Now, in fairness, he's been carrying that team all year, and he shouldn't have to do everything that he's done with the way, but because the defense has been bad, they've had injuries at running back. Like when you've got, you know, Travis Homer or what is it, DJ Dallas is the guy that you have to rely on for the running game. He's your fourth string running back. What can you expect? But can we expect the Cardinals to have the same success against Seattle as they did just a couple of weeks ago? And instead of talking about the first half, can they keep up the success that they had in the second half of that game?
You know, I think that's a fair question, and kind of going to show us where this team is in terms of their maturation. Obviously, their win over the Dolphins was a huge step forward, or sorry, the Bills was a huge step forward, but at the same time, you know, they shouldn't have been in the position. I don't think that's something that you're going to want to try to do more than once every 5 or 6 years, you know, another Hail Mary. And so when you look at it, the way Seattle is playing is always worrisome to me because I just always assume they're going to get right. Because under Pete Carroll with Russell Wilson, they've always gotten right. I mean, eventually they get on their path and they start just winning games again. They did it early this season, starting off 5-0 and then moving to 6-1. But at the same time, this isn't the same Seahawks. Russell Wilson is maybe the best quarterback in the NFL, not named Patrick Mahomes. But like you said, he's been asked to do a lot, and all of a sudden he started to struggle to do everything, which is unfair to him because he really is doing everything. But, you know, the Cardinals need to be able to come in and take advantage of that situation and the fact that, you know, as great as Russ is, and I don't think anybody's really going to argue that, he's pressing, and I know he won't agree with that, but you kind of watch his play. He's pressing because he feels like he has to continue to keep up and score because his defense just isn't what it used to be. And you know, for Seahawks fans that I know, that's been their biggest complaint is that, you know, what happened to this Legion of Boom? What happened to the, what, best three-year run defensively in maybe the last 20 years since the Baltimore Ravens, you know, or going back even further to the Chicago Bears? I mean, this defense is kind of a wet paper bag at this point, and it just feels like it's Russ or bust, and if they are not getting not just great, but, you know, legendary type performances from Russell Wilson, then they're not going to win games.
Right. And you look at especially this matchup, you've got Tyler Lockett, who's got a banged up knee, hasn't practiced yet this week on a short week. He might be out. He's the one who killed him in the last game. 15 catches, 200 yards. That's absurd. He might be out. Their top two corners in Shaq Griffin and Quentin Dunbar both have not practiced this week. Now, I know that Dunbar's knee is a thing they take care of, and he usually plays, but Shaq Griffin's got, he's, you know, when you're missing to your two top corners, Jamal Adams is basically playing on one with one good shoulder right now. That looks like they might get Chris Carson back, but they're down players on their offensive line. They have four offensive linemen who didn't practice. Now, they're not all starters, but Ethan Posich is out. He's an important piece of that line. KJ Wright's a little bit limited, and yet the Cardinals, they have injuries too, but as long as what we've seen with the Cardinals is as long as their secondary is healthy, they are all right. They still have their top receiving targets, and they'll have Kenyon Drake and Chase Edmonds. And so they'll have basically a full offensive arsenal to go against that was, even when healthy, a bad defense. Now it's not going to be healthy. This is one of those games where I want them, like the way they attacked with the way they played against Seattle a year ago, where they jumped out ahead and then held on. I don't think they're going to have to hold on because they have to have a much better offense this year. But if they can get in, they can get ahead in this game instead of having to climb their way back. You can put this Seahawks team away just like they've been put away the last 2 weeks by the Bills and by the Rams.
Yeah, and you kind of watch this week and you see how different this team is from the team that, I mean, let's be honest, when it was 27-17 at half, you and I did not expect the Cardinals to not just mount a comeback, but win a game against the Seattle Seahawks. And so I think you're going to see that continuation. I think you have a chance with the Seahawks, you know, plethora of injuries, just like the Cardinals, but there seem to be at more key positions at this point. Like you said, we'll see, make sure that Jordan Phillips is back and that defensive backfield is completely intact as it's supposed to be, and I think you can feel a little bit more confident about your chances going in this game than maybe we expected to feel, especially, you know, given the fact that Seattle isn't, you know, holding teams down. And Kyler and company have shown that their offense is able to move the ball really against anybody, but against bad teams, they'll put up a bunch of yards, and bad defensive teams, I should say. Seattle's still a very good football team, but and then I think the other thing you hit on was Tyler Lockett. I know they love Chris Carson. I know that they love to run the football, but at the end of the day, if Lockett's not there, that's a huge missing piece. Metcalf is very good, don't get me wrong, but he's
Pat
the
can
type
take care of him. Pat can take him out of the game.
Well, and he's the type of receiver that Pat's actually still really good at defending. It's guys like Lockett, Stephon Diggs, those guys that are nuanced route runners that win with quickness, that have always given Patrick trouble. But, you know, you can see the deterioration of his athleticism from a, you know, being a once in a lifetime athlete to now just a great athlete, which isn't saying a whole lot, but in football that means you've gone from being, you know, an all pro corner to a guy that, I don't want to say just a guy because he's not just a guy, but a guy that may not put up as much fight as he once did as a corner. So, you know, Lockett being out, we'll keep an eye on their offensive line. We both assume Dwayne Brown will play, but Pochick is going to be an interesting one as the kind of anchor of that offensive line. And then defensively, this could be a field day for the Cardinals in terms of throwing the football, especially if their top two corners are still hurting.
How do you see the game playing out? I've been super optimistic, and I think Seattle's going to give a good go of it, but I still think, don't you think this is still going to come down to a final possession pretty much? I think the Cardinals will be in control this one, but I still think that Russ is probably going to be in the game. And even in the game last week, they made it a one possession game. I see this game coming down to the final possession or two. I think the Cardinals come away with a 31-25 win in this game.
And until I see kind of the health report for both teams, it's tough to nail this down. As the health report stands right now, I think we're going to get a kind of another shootout. I'll go with a close loss for the Cardinals and say 35-34.
Oof, rough. But that takes us. So those of you listening to the show probably will catch it either the day before or the day of the show, of the game. If not, you can already, you'll be able to add us early on. We'll be back in a week. We'll be able to talk about the Cardinals and their hopeful win or where they stand in the division as they prepare for the New England Patriots. But that'll wrap up episode 287 of the Riders Up Sea Rip podcast. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. We'll be back in next week. Thanks for listening as always.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up Sea Red.